The Mike Lupica Podcast.
We are back now with the great Mike Lupica. He's one of the country's
most prominent
sports
columnists. Mike Lupica has covered just about every sport.
Candid interviews with legends he calls friends.
I was talking to Jordan about Woods after the basketball game the other night. Everybody in sports to be the next this guy, the next this guy. And Michael said, no, he's the first Tiger.
In your face questions.
How much of a dope is he?
Compelling.
A $1 billion industry, the biggest we've ever had in sports in this country, often comes down to a flip of the coin.
This is the Mike Lupica Podcast. Here's Mike Lupica.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on another episode of the Mike Lupica Podcast. Today, we will be joined by one of the smartest political commentators out there. You've seen him on ABC, CNN, CBS, MSNBC. He writes a column for Politico. He is currently doing pieces for the PBS NewsHour. He is my old friend, Jeff Greenfield. But before we get started with Jeff, I want to tell you about Upstart. Upstart has revolutionized how we borrow money by going beyond the traditional FICO score to offer personal loans, taking into account factors like job experience and education when determining your interest rate. Checking your Upstart rate is free and has no effect on your credit score. Your Upstart rate check takes just 2 minutes, and if you are approved, you can get your funds as soon as the next business day. They make it quick and they make it easy. The path to financial freedom can look awfully bleak when you have high interest debt. And if your FICO score isn't great, it can make breaking out of that revolving debt cycle harder than it needs to be. Thankfully, our sponsor Upstart is revolutionizing the process of personal lending. You have to check them out. Hurry to upstart.com/Lupica to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes 2 minutes and won't affect your credit. That's upstart.com/Lupica. Welcome back to the Mike Lupica Podcast. And my guest today is Jeff Greenfield, who I don't have on nearly often enough. And that's simply on me, except even if I asked him more, he might say, I'm way too busy, Mike. I first met Mr. Greenfield, whose take on the current political scene is as smart and contextually as anybody working on cable TV at the present time. I first met Jeff when I was a kid starting out in sports writing, and he was writing a book on the Boston Celtics. He worked for Robert F. Kennedy. I want to ask him today about comparisons that people are making between Beto O'Rourke and Mr. Kennedy, but I am delighted to have him back on this podcast. Hey, Jeff.
Good to talk to you. Yes, my widely unread book available in church basements all across New England was indeed where we met, and we sort of kept in touch on and off at various places like the U.S. Open and sports venues when I go to, you know, break from politics and cover the really important stuff.
And Mr. Greenfield is also a crazed and wonderful New York Yankee fan, so there is a running dialogue throughout the baseball season, and he suffered this year, even though he thrilled to his team winning 100 games. Before Jeff, before we get to politics, you're right. Let's talk about the subject. When Mike Barnicle talks about the Red Sox, he says they're not a matter of life and death in Boston. They're far more important than that. Okay.
Yeah. And
the Red Sox,
Mr.
Greenfield, not only beat your team this year, but they rubbed your faces in it, including adopting New York, New York is their anthem during the playoffs.
Right. And I think that was a payback for Aaron Judge playing that song on the one game the Yankees won. Look, there is no question in my mind, not only did the Red Sox deserve to win the World Series. I mean, you win 108 games, you blow everybody else out. Nothing's close. If I remember, the only game they lost was that 18-inning marathon. But for me, despairing of how baseball is played so often these days, home run or strike out, which kind of the Dodgers exemplify, the fact that the Red Sox won it by playing the kind of baseball that I find much more interesting to watch, even as a dedicated Yankee fan who sat through Game 6 and 7 of the ALCS in 04, paying hats off. They won it, and they won it the right way.
Jeff, I just wrote a column for MLB.com about the Yankees making this trade for Paxton. We've already emailed about that today. and how their search for a really strong rotation over the last 20 years has been somewhat like baseball's search for the Holy Grail. And I said at the end of the column, yeah, they need more starting pitching even after getting Paxton, and then added, stop me if you've heard this one before. Man, Jeff, I really feel like the last great rotation you had was like in 1998 with Wells and Cohn and Pettit and El Duque. And they have been searching for that ever since. Jeff, you know this. Even when they won the World Series in 2009, it was mostly Sabathia and just enough help from a rebooted Andy Pettit and A.J. Burnett.
Right. I guess I thought when they got Tanaka, if I remember, when the first chunk of the first season he pitched for the Yankees, I think until he got injured, he was the best pitcher in baseball. And I thought, okay, I think maybe this is the key. But, you know, look, starting is a reason why mediocre starting pitchers make what they make when they make new deals. I mean, I guess they may be the hardest commodity to find. Maybe the solution for the Yankees is to, you know, get 9 relief pitchers and have them each throw one inning. That seems to be a trend among some teams. But, you know, I think you're right. If I remember right, 1998, the Yankees were in 1998 what the Red Sox were this past year.
Yes. Uh-huh.
They won more games than anybody else, and they just blew through everybody in the playoffs, right?
The only time they were in trouble, as you recall, they fell behind the Indians 2-1. And
yeah,
that was the moment that, you know, we thought, oh, my God, this historic season might get upended. And of course, they came back and ran the table from there.
Right. So, you know, look, as I say, it may be old age creeping up on me. It certainly is. But I did not watch the playoffs with anything other than real admiration for the Red Sox, just the way I felt about, even though Houston beat us the year before with that amazing game 6 and 7, you know, the pitching, Houston plays the game the way I like to watch baseball. You know, this is your turf, not mine.
No, it's not. You know, no, it's absolutely not. It's our turf because we both love the game that our friend Bob Ryan calls the greatest one ever invented by mortal minds.
Yep. And, you know, it still baffles me that when a team throws an extreme shift against, say, a lefty, why the batter the first two times up doesn't just push the ball to the left side of the infield, get himself a double, and that should be it for the for these extreme shifts. Wasn't it Tejera who said it would screw up his swing?
And I was thinking, adjusted? Really, really?
Yeah, you know, it may be that famous Ralph Kiner observation, which is no longer true, right? That singles hitters drive Chevrolets and home run hitters drive Cadillacs, but as somebody, as you're right, who loves this game and has loved it for more years than I care to remember, a lot of times this year I wasn't enjoying watching the game. Not when 2/3 of everybody who comes up strikes out.
Even with your team setting home run records, Jeff, let me ask you this about baseball, because, you know, a lot was made how ratings weren't what people thought they were going to be for the Red Sox and the Dodgers World Series, and that's fair enough. But I continue to maintain you cannot simply base your analysis of the appeal of this game on television ratings, because from the end of March now through the last out of the World Series, a bazillion people go to ball games in this country. And it has become, for these regional sports networks, the greatest reality series that there is. And it's why all of these regional sports networks are making money the way they do. And I just think that it's too narrow a focus to just say, oh, the ratings aren't as good as we thought they were going to be.
Well, even if you focus on the ratings, look at the deal that Fox just concluded with.
More billions, right? More billions.
I think was it 4? I thought it was 5, but whatever. Well, what's a billion here and there? I mean, yeah. for a sport that's dying, you know, it sure seems to be doing okay at the bottom line. I do think that look, you know that I've one of my obsessions, I've done two network TV pieces on it and a whole piece of Sports Illustrated. I do think the pace of the game is getting to be ridiculous. You know, it's one thing to sit through a five-hour thrilling playoff game that goes 14 innings. It's another thing to sit through a 5-2 game in June, a nine-inning game that goes, you know, 3 hours and 45 minutes. And I think there are answers to this. I'm not sure we ever talked about this, but years ago I did a piece for Sports Illustrated where I got the entire tape of a 1983 game, you know, that lasted 2 hours and 15 minutes. And I was I watched it with a stopwatch and tried to figure out what was going on. And it was really simple. The batters didn't step out of the batter's box, and the pitchers weren't doing transcendental meditation between every pitch.
Talking to Jeff Greenfield. Okay, we have to make the turn. Unfortunately, Jeff, we have to make the turn to politics. I'm sorry to do this. We could do an entire podcast on baseball. Again, Jeff, you see him on the PBS NewsHour. He writes a wonderful column for Politico. He has written several books about politics, and he's a wonderful novelist. Jeff, I keep thinking that the stink attached to people who defend some of the things that this president says and does will last forever. And the most recent is his attack with a compliant GOP on Admiral McRaven, who is the guy who, oh, by the way, tracked down Osama bin Laden. And for them to mislead people about this American hero's own political beliefs is I know this sounds stupid. It's as shameful as anything they've done.
But I think when the history of this period is written, one of the aspects that will get the most attention is how the Republican Party as an institution abandoned the role that we normally expect political parties to play, which is in vetting their own people. I mean, what's left of political parties, and they're nothing like they used to be, is supposed to be that, you know, during the time that you pick a president, you vet, you decide who's, you know, who's fit, and whether it was the fact that he overwhelmed the establishment Republicans during the primaries, and then once he became president, achieved a great deal of popularity within the base of the party, if it just stopped the normal way that American politics works, where even members of your own party understand what their institutional roles is. We've had plenty of examples in the past where members of the president's own party have brought him to account, whether it was Fulbright with Lyndon Johnson and the war in Vietnam, or Lowell Weicker and Howard Baker with Watergate, or Senator Robert Byrd demanding that Democratic presidents behave a certain way. This didn't happen. And so the norms that I grew up watching and covering just went away. And the latest example is that you cite is one of a 2 year stretch where the president has demeaned and insulted, either deliberately or by indifference, the American military, which the Republican Party is normally thought of as its principal supporters of. I mean, the fact that he has spent 2 years and never gone to a war zone because he's very busy, or that he didn't go to the Arlington ceremony on Veterans Day because he was making a lot of phone calls. I mean, the idea that the Republicans who revere the military didn't say, Mr. President, you can't behave like this. Now, it's true that that Trump was responding to the Admiral's statement that Trump's attack on the press was a threat to democracy. But then to say, you know, you should have caught bin Laden sooner. You remember, I don't mean to make light of it, you remember it's an old Seinfeld episode where George Costanza works for the Yankees, and he tells someone, he sneers at someone because it took him six games to win the 1996 World Series? That was funny. When Trump said what he said, a guy whose extensive experience in the military we all know, you know, all those bone spurs, the fact that the Republican Party has not stood up and pushed back is one of the most striking aspects of this whole period.
Talking to Jeff Greenfield on the Mike Lupica podcast, Jeff spends most of the year out in California, north of Los Angeles, but he has, you know, he has had natural disasters come a lot closer than these fires did this time. Jeff, as a now Californian, I watched it again today and still cannot believe there is a town, for people who haven't followed this story perhaps as closely as others have, called Paradise in California, that has basically been leveled by these fires. And twice the other day, the president of the United States referred to it as pleasure. Pleasure, California, until he was corrected. And as Steve, I don't know if you saw what Stephen Colbert said last night, Jeff, but he said, no, Mr. President, pleasure's the name of the dancer. Paradise is the name of the club.
But, you know, what strikes me as now a resident in Santa Barbara, who that last year experienced fires way closer to us, is this may be the new normal. The fire season extends longer than it has in years past. The lack of rain, we're in I think we're basically in the seventh year of a drought out here, means that the tinder is almost at any point in the year ready to explode. And the idea that this is going to be what people live through literally from one end of the state to the other. Paradise was up in the north of California. The Woolsey fires sent 200,000 people fleeing Malibu and surrounding areas. The idea that this is how we're going to live is a portent for the future that it's about as grim as you can imagine. I mean, I remember last year we had to flee, not because the fires were that close, although they were pretty close, but the air was unbreathable. As people up north are finding out, the fires in the north spread smoke into San Francisco to the point where that air was for a while the unhealthiest in the world. And this, again, the idea that people are now going to talk about continue to talk about climate change as a hoax, which is the president's view, in the face of the evidence. I don't mean that climate change caused this fire, but it created conditions to make it more of a danger, both in terms of frequency and seriousness. How this is a political issue is utterly beyond me.
Talking to Jeff Greenfield on the Mike Lupica podcast. And Jeff, you know, one of the things that has always attracted me to your punditry, even though that almost sounds like a curse word now in the current culture of this country, is that you don't go on TV with your hair on fire, that you're able to provide some context and some perspective. And because we both figured out that you simply can't go to war with this guy over every lie on or every tweet. Okay. And so how do you decide whether what you're writing or whether you're appearing on television, which hills to really fight for?
Well, I think you make a very valid point. And maybe it's the old school journalist in me, but I find, for instance, the 8 hours a day of panels that CNN puts on where you get the sense that Mueller's on his way down to Pennsylvania Avenue with handcuffs and an arrest warrant. It's overkill. So for me, the point is less to try to go saying, well, Donald Trump said a dumb thing again, because that is a recently daily occurrence. But to say, okay, for instance, the way that he has constantly traduced and insulted the military and his own party has remained silent. That to me is a significant indication of where we are. The fact that he tweets five times a night and can't spell and creates insults, we know that. And in fact, I think one of the things that happened in the midterms was that the Democratic candidates around the country for the House of Representatives in particular I interviewed a few of them and they said, no, you know, Trump's baked in the cake. We don't have to go out and rend our garments and tell everybody how terrible it is. We got to talk about what we think we can accomplish and what needs to be done as a country. So for me, I spent more recently comparatively less time writing about Trump than about other stuff, like, for instance, the lay of the land politically, like, for instance, why I think that we are we are headed for another year or two of gridlock. Boy, I think that the notion of a post midterm cooperative bipartisan atmosphere just doesn't square up with the facts. So really what I try to do is much more, you know, try to do kind of be analytical in this context. I'll just take one more minute. If you contrast what happened after Obama, Clinton, George W. Bush, Harry Truman, Ronald Reagan, all presidents who suffered midterm losses, how they behaved versus how this president behaves, how the Democratic base is out for blood, and how the Republican minority in the House is going to be more conservative than it was. If you analyze that, take a step back, you say, well, where's the bipartisanship going to come from? I hope I'm wrong.
Jeff Greenfield is our guest on the Mike Lupica podcast. More with Jeff after I tell you about my good friends at Peter Manning Clothing. Are you tired of wearing clothes that don't fit right, never finding your size, or spending too much time and money at the tailor? Well, you have to check out my friends at Peter Manning. They've developed a fresh line of apparel specifically designed for not-so-tall guys. You can check them out at www.petermanningnyc.com or visit their store in New York City, as I have, at 933 Broadway. You'll feel good and look great wearing proper fitting clothes. It's changed thousands of lives, and it'll change yours too. No more baggy pants, no more pirate arms, and no more tailor tacks. Again, you can visit them online at www.petermanningnyc.com or in Manhattan at 933 Broadway. I can't tell you how much Peter Manning clothing I have, my sons have. Also, if my listeners use code Lupica, you'll get 20% off your order. Again, that's code Lupica for 20% off your order. Check them out today and discover a great fit. When you look at what happened in the midterms, is there any possible blueprint that you can see for whomever will be the Democratic candidate in 2020? And I add this to my question. I'm still not convinced, for all the money that's being spent and for all of his narcissism, that this guy is definitely going to run again.
You need to bring in a practicing psychoanalyst for this. The reason why I am skeptical about that view is that we were told 2.5 years ago, he'll never run. It's all a publicity stunt. The minute he gets criticized, he'll withdraw. He'll never make it through the primaries. He'll never make it through the Access Hollywood tape. He'll get bored or frustrated. You know what? Being president of the United, you know the old Mel Brooks line, it's good to be the king? Yeah. There's a lot to be said for being president, particularly if you love power and you love being the center of attention. You can't get to be more the center of attention than the president. You know, they shut down the airway, the air corridors when you fly. You have a beautiful plane. They play music whenever you enter the room. Even if you aren't a raging egomaniac, it kind of is appealing. So the idea that people will walk, that he will walk away from this, seems to me doubtful. I'm not saying it wouldn't happen. This guy's in so many ways unpredictable. But I don't think people lightly leave a job where you want everybody in the world to pay attention to you. And here you are. By the way, there's something else I think I have figured out about Trump. And this relates to our previous topic. Remember when he said a lot of people don't know that Babe Ruth was a pitcher?
Yeah,
okay. Well, that's true, unless you were like over 8 years old and have ever read. But the reason he says that is when Donald Trump says people don't know something, it means he didn't know something. Because he believes he knows more than anybody else, his general way of reference is if I don't know something, nobody else does. So a lot of people didn't know that Babe Ruth was a pitcher because it didn't occur to him.
Many, many people didn't know that Babe Ruth was a pitcher. We're talking to Jeff Greenfield on the Mike Lupica podcast. I referenced him at the start. Did we actually come up with a viable Democratic candidate for president because Beto O'Rourke lost to Ted Cruz in Texas? Because Jeff, the one number I keep looking at is not how much Cruz beat him by, that a Democrat like Beto O'Rourke got 4 million votes in the state of Texas.
You know, there's two things to be said about this. I believe that if it weren't for the First Amendment, we should pass a law forbidding any political campaigning for president or analysis of presidential campaigns until say, 18 months before the November election. It's ludicrous. The polls measure nothing but name identification. I believe now there are something like 460 people planning to run for Democratic president. That first debate, you're going to be limited to haikus because there's going to be 50 people up there. And I also think that the idea of searching for the bright, shiny political object is not necessarily the way to go. The Democrats have suffered enormously by being so focused on presidential campaigns that they let a majority of state legislatures and governorships fall to the Republicans, which is where a lot of the power is. I think if you know, Beto O'Rourke could do a lot more good for the Democratic Party remaining in Texas and trying to build a party organization in that state, because we're looking for the guy who can, you know, who can excite the room. I think, in fact, there are two very smart people, one Democrat, one Republican, one very liberal, one very conservative, who both said to me exactly the same thing, that the Democrats need to nominate the safest, most boring candidate they can find, because what's really driving people crazy about Trump is they're exhausted by the frenzy. So maybe, you know, Fred McMurray, if you're old enough to remember My Three Sons, or Ward Cleaver, or Jim Anderson from Father Knows Best, one of those old 1950s TV fathers, and just say to everybody, calm down, let's get back to normal. That might be where they would go. But I stand by my original notion. I think this immediate lunge to figuring out who the Democrats are going to nominate 2 years before the election is just not where we ought to be.
Talking to Jeff Greenfield on the Mike Lupica podcast, when you look at the power that Trump still wields and the hold he still has on his base, it's not simply enough to say that that all of these people are slow thinkers, Jeff, or all of them are racist. But I do think a lot of this is a stubbornness on a great part of that base to admit that they were just dead wrong about this guy.
Not yet. I think there is a small share of his base that's beginning to move away from him. But look, one of the reasons that I think Trump survived what nobody else could have survived and continues to survive among his base, not among the country, is that the very thing that his critics look as a bug, they see as a feature. The vulgarity, the bullying, is there. He's sticking it to people that his base has wanted somebody to beat up for years. He's finally saying what we believe. Some of it is extremely troublesome. There's a new book out about the 2016 campaign called Identity Politics, which suggests that, contrary to the analysis, an awful lot of Trump support came not from economic anxiety, but from cultural grievance, which is a polite way of saying they were really bothered by people who didn't look like them moving up in the world. And I think for them that Trump is like he's the national, he's their id. He's the stuff that they've wanted to see somebody bring out in public, and they love it. I mean, those rallies that he does, you know, it's a kind of performance art from him, and he feeds that kind of, stick it to him, Mr. President. Thank God we've got a president who can say what we've always wanted to say. And I think where I think your notion may come to fruition is if the combination of what's happening in the stock market, the impact of the tariffs in farm country, the impact of the tariffs on manufacturing, produces something like a wicked recession starting in about a year. And at that point, I think you're going to see people saying, I mean, Trump supporters say, wait a minute, you were going to make America great again. You were going to bring coal back. You were going to bring industry back. What's going on? But they're not there yet.
Talking to Jeff Greenfield on the Mike Lupica podcast, you know, I'm sure you watched Chris Wallace's interview with Trump on Sunday. And I really honestly believe that Chris, with a couple of exceptions, did as well as you could do with this guy, knowing that he's just going to keep throwing one head fake after another, even though he sits there like a lump in that chair. But Jeff, how about him looking at Chris? And I know that we're supposed to be used to the lies by now, and saying, well, I regret that I didn't go to Arlington on this Veterans Day because I did last year. Except, Jeff, he didn't go last year.
Yeah, well,
he went on Memorial Day.
This is where everybody, including you, has to try the decaf. That's part of what I think is, I think part of his fan base likes the fact that he drives the press crazy. And my feeling is, at this point, and I think Chris did a very, very good job on that, part of the problem I have in general with the political press in situations where they confront somebody in power is they all think they're Perry Mason. They think if they just ask the right question, they're going to get the equivalent of a courtroom confession.
Yeah.
Where Trump's going to suddenly fall to his knees and says, "You're right, you're right. I've lied through my teeth about everything. I don't know, you know, I have the knowledge of a fifth grader. I'm a terrible president. In fact, I'm leaving now to save the country." This isn't the way things work. And all you can do, I think, is to point out, you know, "Mr. President, you weren't there." Or, and he'll just ride right over and say, "Yes, I was. Sure, I was." We've lived through this from the moment he announced. And I think all the press is always at a profound disadvantage because if they become too adversarial, and I think, frankly, that CNN's Jim Acosta has found himself in this situation, then you become a combatant. And your job in the press is all you can do is to say, "This is what the president said. He's wrong. It didn't happen. It didn't happen." And look, now, as opposed to the Republican base, the president remains a very unpopular president. I think what happened in the midterms, in spite of what is now a strong economy, was a direct repudiation in district after district of his presidency. And that's where the effect is going to be.
Jeff, when I've followed this over the past week or so, and far smarter people than I have raised this possibility, that Rick Scott and even Trump himself have laid the groundwork for 2020. And if Trump does run again, and if he does lose a close election, that he will say exactly what he would have said in 2016. "They rigged it. They stole it from me. And it will paralyze the country for months after Election Day 2020.
Well, look, there's two things to be said. One, this is very much like, if you remember, in Citizen Kane, when Charles Foster Kane runs and loses an election, the headline of the paper he owns reads, "Fraud at the Polls." But it was interesting to me that in this case, a number of Republican officials in Arizona, that was a very close race that the Democrats won, and even in Florida, a couple of the Republican local officials said, no, cool it. There's nothing going on here, like before. Will the president say something like that again? We're 2 years away. But I don't. I think that dog won't hunt, as we never said on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. I just don't think that people are going to buy that.
We're talking to Jeff Greenfield on the Mike Lupica podcast, who has written a series of wonderful political novels. Jeff, nothing dismissive about the ones that have come over the last 20 years, but The People's Choice was, I assume, your most popular. Better for the author to do this. I loved it. Give your bumper sticker version of what The People's Choice was about.
Well, it was pretty simple. Right after the election, the guy we just elected dies in a photo opportunity. And the people who actually choose the president, the 538 electors, faceless people we never know, suddenly it's their power. They are suddenly free agents. They're going to get to pick the president. We've never heard of them. There are all kinds of machinations in the book about people being bribed, about people trying to form alliances. And the funny thing was, when Hollywood bought the book, they decided they couldn't make the movie because it was too ridiculous. And then after the 2000 election with the 37-day recount, they looked at it again and said, "You know what? What you wrote isn't weird enough compared to what happened." But it is a book that I really liked. I've been wrestling with trying to do another political satire. But as many people better at this than I am have noted, that after Trump's election, trying to do political satire is... How do you do something that's weirder than reality? You know, I also have written a number of books about alternate history. And people asked me if I was going to do one about Trump. And I said, no, that this is the alternate history. This is what we're living through.
We're talking with the great Jeff Greenfield on the Mike Lupica podcast. More with Mr. Greenfield in a minute. But first, a word from Geico. there's a quick way you could save money. Just switch to Geico. All it takes is 15 minutes to find out if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. And Geico offers coverage for more than just car insurance. Got a motorcycle? Geico's got you covered. Got an RV? Covered. Got a boat? Covered. How about a homeowner's or renter's insurance? You bet Geico's got you covered. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save. That's geico.com. Hey, what do you think my dear friend Carl Hiaasen has been up against in Florida writing his novels after the over the last 30 years? He complains to me bitterly that it's so difficult for him to stay ahead of the shit that actually goes on in Florida.
No, I think, you know, Hiaasen and I'll tell you a quick story. Dave Barry and Alan Zweibel, the great comedy writer, did a novel a few years ago called Ludicrous about these two schmageggies that wind up running for president and vice president. And to make the book really ridiculous, they had them running against Donald Trump. Now, Hollywood bought that book before Trump was elected, and now they're stuck. Because what they wrote as the most absurd notion in the world is reality. And I often think about guys like Hiaasen, who I love, and Barry. The only satirists who avoided this were the people who did Veep, the great HBO show, because that takes place in a completely alternate universe. There are no Republicans, there are no Democrats, so there's no real life off which they work, and they survived. But you know, I'm telling you, I literally the notes for this novel are on my desk as we talk. And I look at it and I go, well, what do I do that's weirder than what happened?
Jeff, the one thing that appalls me about what we've witnessed over the last 2 years is that this guy, with a limited sense of how government works, with no sense of what the office of the presidency is supposed to mean other than for his own self-aggrandizement, okay, is how he found so many of the weaknesses in our system. And he's kind of rolled what the founding fathers intended. And the most recent example is the appointment of this acting attorney general, Matthew Whitaker. Jeff, how surprised would you be if, like 2 o'clock in the morning, watching a late baseball game one night, you saw Matt Whitaker come on and say, "Hi, have you been injured in the workplace? And here's my 800 number."
Well, you see, here's where reality doesn't take a bad seat. The real life history of this guy is that he was part of a company that, among other things, pitched a time travel concept and also made extra large, I hate to put it this way, extra large toilet bowls for men who were excessively endowed. So would you write that in a satire? No, it's ridiculous, except that's who this guy is. You know, that's what I'm talking about. It is true, more seriously, the way the system works, a system like ours, depends on certain things that are not in the Constitution, that are not in the Bill of Rights, that are not in our statute books, but that everybody understands are the way you behave. And on this case, it's not just the president. I think Senate Leader Mitch McConnell has been extremely effective because he simply has disregarded the way we normally think that a legislative chamber like the Senate is supposed to work. You know, it's a purely transactional notion. I'm telling you, if Hillary Clinton had won the election and the Republicans had kept the Senate, they would have found a way to keep that Supreme Court seat open for 4 years. You know,
McConnell has got some Dick Cheney in him, doesn't he, Jeff?
I hadn't thought it that way. I think because McConnell's life has been spent in the Senate, his mastery of how to make that body work on behalf of his political goals rivals anything I've ever seen. You know, you have to go back to probably to Lyndon Johnson, who when he was majority leader, who used the weaponry as effective. By the way, that movie about, I've seen the coming attractions for this movie, Vice.
Yeah.
Where Christian Bale plays Dick Cheney. I cannot wait to see it. It looks like this is the guy that wrote that dude, The Big Short, Adam McKay. So we'll see how he handles, you know, doing this light touch. But look, we're in it. If you had asked me 5 years ago if I could ever imagine a political reality that we're in now, I would have said, get me some of what you're smoking, because no. But you're right. I think the key to what you said is Trump found certain weaknesses in the way we do politics. And he also found, to be blunt, the fact that the establishment had failed any number of people. I mean, even though economic anxiety may not be the key to the Trump vote, it certainly helped fuel it. And a lot of the promises were made to the people that were less well off in this country, poor and working class people, weren't kept. So there was a reason for this kind of resentment that he could exploit. And the Democrats now in control of the House had better figure out a message that actually speaks to this discontent. If they hope to, if they hope to improve their standing, because neither party is in particularly good standing right now.
Jeff, one of my favorite lines in all my years of covering sports came from Bob Arum when he got caught in a lie, and when asked to defend himself, he said the following: "Yesterday I was lying, today I'm telling the truth." Okay? Except with Trump, it's yesterday I was lying and today I'm still lying. He never goes back. There's no editing at all. The way there's no editing as he is actually speaking or tweeting. And he in so many ways, Jeff, it's quite amazing, because I've known this guy for 30 years. He really is a king of unintended self-parody. I mean, who would have ever thought that we would find a moment in American politics where the president of the United States, in a tweet, would refer to Adam Schiff as Adam Shit on purpose?
And to show you the impact he has, the New York Times editorial page today, their editorial observer or whatever, ends, "Who gives a shit?" That's the New York Times, the good gray lady. So he's had that impact. But look, I'm going to leave you with this to understand Trump. There's a movie, I think it may be Love America. No, it's a movie where Joey Bishop is caught in bed with a woman. His wife comes in. She finds him. And Joey Bishop and the girl get out of bed, put their clothes on. And every time the woman is complaining, Joe Bishop says, "What? What?" And he goes into the living room, sits down, reads the paper, and his wife is so flummoxed that she says, "What do you want for dinner?" And the name of that segment is, I think, "Deny, Deny, Deny." And that is, in fact, the advice that Donald Trump gave to a friend of his who'd been caught out in a situation. Just deny, deny, deny. And I think the very audacity, that's the word I'm looking for. I think Barack Obama talked about the audacity of hope or something like that. And Trump's audacity in defining reality based on his delusions is so extreme that it kind of puts people off their feet. It kind of, you go, wait a minute. What do you mean 2 + 2 is 6.5? And that's part of what I think appeals to his base. I think it's part of what makes him historically unpopular. And I think over time, it may be what ultimately erodes him to the point where he loses whatever power he has. And on that note, sir, I will bid you a fond farewell. It's good to talk to you. And perhaps I'll see you the next time I get to the U.S. Open.
Hey, thanks for doing this, pal.
You remember that you and I were judged by one of the players. We were sitting in the down close, and we kept gabbing so much, the guy turned to us and said, "Shut up."
Not the first time it's happened at a sports event that we both attended. Jeff, happy Thanksgiving. Thanks for doing this today, pal.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Well, that is one of the smartest people in politics, and you heard what he applies, an old-fashioned thing called common sense, to what the train wreck that we are currently witnessing. Jeff Greenfield, again, watch him on the PBS NewsHour, read his novels, read his column in Politico. You see him on Morning Joe and other platforms on MSNBC. Thank you for listening. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody who checks in with this podcast every single week. We'll have some great news about this as we go into the new year's. Continue to download, continue to subscribe. Go ahead and leave comments if you want to. We want to know what you're thinking, and we will talk to you next week, everybody.
The Mike Lupica Podcast is produced and distributed by Compass Media Networks in conjunction with Hiltzik Creative. For iPhone users, go to the podcast app and search the Mike Lupica Podcast. Click on the Mike Lupica Podcast icon and subscribe. For non-iPhone users, you can listen on Google Play Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, or your preferred podcast platform.